I would like to remind all parties the call is now being recorded. If you have any objections, please disconnect at this time. And thank you. You may begin.
Thank you very much, Elon. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. Welcome to the GNSO Working Group Newcomer Open House session on the 8th of May 2014. On the call today, we have Avi Doria, Fazane, Krishna Kumar, Siva Bhushanin Mutulami. From staff, we have Marika Koenigs, Terry Agnew, Kathy Schmidt, and myself, Master Peregrine. I'd like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for the purposes of the transcription. Thank you very much, and over to you, Marika.
Thanks, Natalie. I think it's actually over to Avery for today's call.
Yes, but as we suggested, hi, this is Avery Doria. I guess I'm one of the co-hosts, we call them, for this open house session. I'm one of the volunteers who, unfortunately, in looking back, realizes that I've been party to setting up much of the process structures that we have. And therefore, you know, it makes sense that I should have volunteered for this. Might as well move to the next slide. Okay. And I'd like to ask Marika to sort of take us through the GNSO policy support team, which are the folks that are sort of essential to making sure that the GNSO gets any policy work done.
Thanks, Avery. So my name is Marika Koenigs. I'm a senior policy director and responsible for the GNSO team. I'm actually based in the ICANN office in Brussels. And as Avery said, we're here with a team of people supporting the GNSO activities, you know, both at the council level, but also at the working group level. And that ranges from, you know, helping scheduling and setting up calls to, you know, supporting the meetings, providing information, you know, trying to help groups move forward, synthesizing comments and input received, and as well, in many occasions, providing drafts of reports for working group review. So as you're all here new, I thought it would be good to just show our pictures, and you know, we have an opportunity to either see the ICANN meetings or in the virtual world, you're always encouraged and free to reach out to us with any questions you may have and let us know in any way which we can help you and support you in the GNSO activities. So our fearless leader, David Olive, is based in the ICANN office in Istanbul. So he's the vice president for policy development. Underneath that, there are different other teams that also support other parts of the ICANN policy development community. Glenis Jansery, she is the GNSO secretariat based in Cannes in France. Slides are moving. Mary Wong, senior policy director based in the U.S., New Hampshire. Julie Headland, and also a policy director based in Washington, D.C. Lars Hoffman, a policy analyst based in Brussels, kind of near the office. We also have support from Barry Kopp, who's a consultant to our team, and Natalie, who's on the call here today as well, who supports most of our working group efforts from a secretariat perspective in scheduling and making sure everyone gets their reminders on time and shows up for the calls. I think with that, we'll actually go to the goals for the session, and I'll hand it back to Avery.
Okay. So the agenda for this is flexible. The basic idea is to go through some of the processes. It's an informal sharing of experiences. You guys can ask any questions you may have, and hopefully it can provide you with some tips and tricks to finding your way around. And, in fact, we did already have a question that I'm not quite sure how I'm going to fit in yet, but just to bring it up before I move on, because the question said, even before the session begins, some thoughts that occurred to me just by looking at the topic. The session appears intended to orient newcomers to GNSO working groups. But a lateral thought is this: why not GNSO participation priority for newcomers on certain working groups with lighter, more generalized policy topics? Newcomers would be encouraged to join such lighter working groups, gain a bit of experience both on the way of working and on the policy processes, and get prepared to move on to really serious policy topics. Well, now, I'm not quite sure I understand the question, but, of course, the whole point of this meeting, as I understand it, this webinar, is to get people prepared. Now, I don't know how you judge a lighter policy topic from a heavier policy topic. certainly there are no working groups that are constructed just for experiment or just for let's have a talk about policy. All of them that get started have some purpose, have some goal, have some piece of work to accomplish. Now, the whole point, though, is to get newcomers involved as soon as possible in any working group that meets their interests. So I guess I would put the question in a different way, as sort of, here's going to be a quick introduction to what it's about. You know, what are working groups? What are they for? Why are we doing them? What are some of the processes they feed into? How can you all get involved in these things? And then picking something that is of interest to you is probably the best way to get started, because the easiest subjects are often the ones you're most interested in. But, you know, but certainly there's never been a notion of let's have some easy policy working groups so that we can bring along newcomers. And I don't really think that would work, but perhaps it's something we could talk about at some other point. Let me now do the slide. Okay. So what do you want to learn more about? So your questions. So there are standard questions. What is the GNSO policy development process? What's consensus policy? What's this picket fence people keep talking about? Are there guidelines for working groups, and what are those guidelines, and what does it mean to be a guideline? Are there things on mechanics about the wikis, the Adobe Connect? We're using Adobe Connect at the moment. Adobe Connect is a wonderful tool. And then there's tips and tricks for finding information. That's one I can't help you much on, because I constantly have trouble finding stuff, and I find that I really just have to look at things because the wikis and the web pages change quite dynamically. But I'm told that there's a working group that's out there now making it easier so that one day even people like me will find things easily. So the policy development process, and please, if you want to stop me and ask a question, raise your hand and I'll stop. So here's a design of the process. The GNSO Council is the manager of the policy development process. It is not the legislature. It is not the maker of policy. It is the group that manages the process and decides when a recommendation is ready to go on. So it starts out with a request for an issues report. An issues report can be requested by any number of the groups, from the board to any advisory committee or any other SO. Obviously, it can also be requested within the GNSO. Then there's a decision whether to initiate policy development process or not after the issues report. If the policy is initiated, a working group is formed. There is the gathering of public comments, both from the constituencies and the community at large. That one says there's a specific request for those constituency statements, which are public comments. The working group puts out an initial report. It has basically talked about things. It's come up with an initial report. That goes for public comment. Questions are asked. Then using that as input and any other information that has been gained along the way, the working group produces a final report, which is sent to the GNSO Council. The GNSO Council is supposed to look at that, make sure that the due process of the policy development process working group has happened, that the issues have all been explored, that the comments have been dealt with adequately, and basically that the report is as it should. Now, there's an arrow put in at this point because the GNSO Council is not really supposed to decide differently than the recommendations that came from a working group, but the GNSO Council can very well look at a report and say, has this issue been dealt with adequately? They can send back questions. They can send back the work and sort of say, you know, we don't think it's quite ready. It's not something they've done very often, if at all, but it is one of the looping mechanisms that's available. So if the GNSO in its deliberations gets to a point and says, well, there's this policy question that was not answered, the GNSO Council's not really supposed to make the decision at that point. They're supposed to kick it back to the working group and say, hey. Now, hopefully that won't happen because there's a great amount of interaction between the council and the working group while the work is being done, but it could happen. Once the GNSO approves it, and on a policy development process we'll get to later, there's a very complicated set of voting rules to decide that. It is made as a recommendation to the ICANN board. It has, you know, extra information added to it. Again, public comments are gathered on the GNSO's recommendation. Now, these comments are for the board to look at in terms of it. At the same time, the ICANN staff prepares other background information that may be necessary to the board in making their decision. There's a board vote. Again, this vote is constrained. If the GNSO Council had approved this thing by a supermajority, then the board would need to have a supermajority to overrule it. That has not happened very often, if at all. Again, there's an arrow here because the board can, based upon its consultations with other stakeholder groups, based upon the public comments, based upon its own discussions, could have further discussions. Again, the board is not supposed to be making policy recommendations. It's supposed to be looking at the work that was done, judging its adequacy, judging that indeed all of the community and even beyond the community was involved in doing it. And if they don't feel that's the case, they too can send it back. So it's not as straight a linear as it sometimes looks. And in fact, we see occasions fairly recently where the board is asking questions of the GNSO Council. I see a hand raised. Sean, please go ahead. Are you mute, perhaps, while you're talking? Or you just want me to answer the question that you put in the chat? I can do that. So you ask, what are the factors that determine what makes an issue worthy qualify to go to the next step, i.e. the PDP? Secondly, does this mean every request that makes it to PDP has a new working group set for it? Okay. So what makes an issue worthy of going forward is if the board sent the issue, if the board requested the issues report, it goes forward. They sort of have an automatic PDP. If the board wants a policy development process done, it moves forward. There still needs to be an issues report, et cetera, but it does move forward. In terms of all the others, it's based upon a vote of the GNSO Council. So it's the GNSO Council that reads the issues report, reads within the issues report whether the ICANN staff thinks it's in scope or not in scope. And this, some of the stuff is probably in the slides. Not there yet. So I'm probably not doing it well with the slides that are there in the future, but we'll get back to them. So anyhow, that's it. In terms of working groups, yes, there's a new working group formed for every PDP, and the work of a PDP is that. Now, you have some cases where we had the so-called IRTP ABCD groups, and that was the Inter-Registrar Transfer Protocol, and that was such a serious set of work, not serious in terms of more important than others, but just an incredible list of hard questions to answer, that was divided into multiple policy development processes, each of which had their own working group, but I'd say 80% of the population in those groups was probably the same people. So yes, when I'm at the board. Thank you, Marika, for filling in. Okay, so then let me move on to the next slide. I've actually never done one of these before where I was changing the slide. So a PDP working group requirements. So when a working group starts, first of all, the constituencies and stakeholder groups are asked to respond to the PDP issues, to the PDP questions. Often the working group will define a particular set of questions that they would like the constituencies to respond to. Not all constituencies are good at getting this done. Often it requires reminding them multiple times, but they do give essential information that then basically the working group has a basis upon which to start discussing the issues. There are also the other comments. There's formally seeking the opinion of other ICANN advisory committees and supporting organizations. So at the same time, usually, that the constituencies are being requested statements, a request will go out to the other ACs and SOs, often with the same questions, sometimes perhaps with other questions. It's also hoped that at this time they become aware of the work, and if they didn't respond to some of the early calls for participation, they may see in this an issue where they do want to contribute. And as I probably didn't say yet, but the working groups are open to everybody, and not just members of the GNSO. And in fact, there's a very strong call and a very strong desire to make sure that working groups have a full diversity of perspectives. Then there's development of an initial report. The initial report takes a first stab at the questions that have been asked in the policy development. So whatever issues the policy is being developed for, the group will put those down. And perhaps if they have further questions, perhaps in some cases, you know, they've been talking about possible policy, but there's ambiguity or there's difference of opinion, then sometimes the initial report will frame some of those questions and discussions in such a way that people can actually have access to the open issues and can comment on them and hopefully give, you know, some substantive comments that allow the working group to have a better chance to actually fulfill its mandate and come to a reasonable set of recommendations. The next step is incredibly important, the review of comments. A lot of times people put comments into various places, and it's somewhat like a black hole. Within GNSO working groups, and this is orchestrated beautifully by a process that, you know, Marika and others in the process have put together, there is a slow march through each and every question, through each and every comment made, looking at the parts of the text that it affects, and a decision is made on each one on how to handle it. Now, that doesn't mean that every comment will result in a change, but it does mean that every comment will be looked at, will be discussed, and will have some sort of response entered into a table that the policy staff keeps on behalf of the working group. And looking at any of these working group artifacts will convince anybody, I hope, that in terms of reviewing comments, working groups in the GNSO are really quite serious and take this as one of their more important tasks. At the end of that, a final report is written. It is approved by consensus. Even if everyone in the group doesn't agree with every point that's made in the thing and has entered minority views or what have you, they all have to agree in a consensus matter to the report itself going forward. I see no questions. I'll move to the next slide. Let me know if I'm talking too much. So there's further reading. Annex A of the ICANN bylaws is the touchstone that no matter what other rules we make, they always have to be consistent with that. There's the PDP manual that gets into big detail about all of the issues report, the stages of the issues report, and such, and then there's the consensus policy overview. Consensus policy and the picket fence. Okay, so the ICANN contracts with registries and registrars are a distinctive sort of contract in that in many contracts, once the two parties at the beginning agree, then that's it. The contract is written, it's in stone, nothing changes unless it's renegotiated by both parties. In an ICANN registry contract and in the registrar accreditation agreement, there are actually sections of the contract that are called consensus policy. And part of the contract includes an obligation on the registry or registrar to abide by any consensus policy changes made to their contract, which means that the GNSO policy development process can reach into an existing contract and materially change the conditions of that contract. That is, there may be other places that do similar things, but by and large, I think that is one of the big distinctions of an ICANN policy and ICANN contracts. So when you hear people talking about a consensus policy, it's a specification broadly supported by ICANN stakeholders and binds registrars and registries. This is also one of the reasons why registries and registrars have an equal voice with other stakeholders in the process and why the voting balance has been decided as it is, so that the contracted house, those who are bound by the policy changes, and the non-contracted house, those who are not bound by these contracts but are the users and registrants, have equal voices and equal vote overall on the council. And that's one of the driving principles of that particular setup in the GNSO council and in the process. So the background, and I may have already said this. So, yes, there's three conditions under which a consensus policy can be made. And they can't be policies that would favor one registrar over another or favor one registry over another. They can't be things that concern the competition between between registries or between registrars or among, I should say, among registries and among registrars. But there are policies related to where it's a coordinated resolution. So uniform or coordinated resolution is reasonably necessary to facilitate interoperability, technical reliability, or stability of the Internet or domain name system. Remembering that ICANN's primary mission is the stability, security, and resiliency of the Internet and the naming and numbering systems. That the registry and registrar policies reasonably necessary to implement consensus policy registry. So that it's not just it'd be nice to have, but it's something that's considered a necessary issue that needs to be resolved. And it has to relate to disputes regarding registration of domain names as opposed to the use of domain names. We do not make policies on use. We do make policies on registration and such. And the details of consensus policy are defined in the registry and registrar agreements, and indeed to get details sometimes of what's exactly included in these issues, one needs to actually look at those agreements. A picket fence. The picket fence is sort of an image that's been built to explain what is within the consensus policy and what falls outside of consensus policy. The picket fence has been variably seen as something that protects the registry and registrar, and seen as something that enables the registrants and users. And as the registries and registrars can be certain of certain business conditions that are necessary for them in terms of establishing and running their business, for example. But if there is a serious user issue or a serious registrant issue that does not affect competition and falls within the areas, then it can be said to fall within the picket fence, and it's a place where ICANN, the GNSO, followed on by the board, with the involvement of the whole community, can indeed make policy changes that actually change, as I said, the material conditions of the contract within that picket fence. Okay, have there been questions I needed to answer? Nope. Okay, so there's more reading about that on consensus policy. And indeed, that pile looks somewhat small. Working group guidelines. So now, first of all, these are guidelines. And that word is seriously meant. They're, the objective is to assist working groups to optimize their productivity and effectiveness. They are guidelines. Every working group does have an option to decide to what extent it's going to follow the guidelines or not. But if it doesn't have to follow the guidelines, then it needs sort of the approval of the GNSO Council as chartering, and it needs to have a good reason for it. The guidelines cover everything, including the first meeting, the roles of, and responsibilities of various working group members, use of teams, briefings, subject matter experts, participation and representativeness. For example, there are very strong statements in the guidelines about the working group chair's responsibility to make sure that the working group is indeed representative of the GNSO and of the wider community. And if the chair believes that there's an imbalance in the working group, they have very strong obligations to do something about it. They have an obligation to monitor participation and notice that, oops, non-commercial stakeholder groups haven't been participating, and send off email to the chair saying, you know, chair, your people haven't been participating. I bring this up because my chair got one of those messages recently. There's process integrity. There's behavior and norms for established behavior, you know, beyond the normal politeness. There's an appeal process. If people in the working group don't think things are going properly, there is a whole set of expanding appeals on the work of the working group chair. There's often a liaison who's a connection between the working group and the GNSO Council. Then there's going to the GNSO Council. There's going to the ombudsman. There are many different appeals mechanisms. There's communications and collaboration tools. We use wikis a lot. Some of us are constantly trying to push the boundaries on that in terms of getting new tools added. Basically, as tools are needed, as they're shown to be useful, and as ICANN achieves the ability to sort of standardize and manage the tools, new tools are added. And then there's discussion of the various products and outputs of that. The GNSO Working Group Guidelines is actually an interesting document, and this is sort of an aside, for anybody that's doing a working group anywhere. The people that wrote it, and I was part of that ubiquitous crowd, or I was part of that crowd in a ubiquitous manner, basically brought in a lot of experience from a lot of working groups in other organizations and experience gotten through ICANN, and put together a fairly rich set of guidelines that I've seen used in other circumstances, and they're useful. So even if you're not participating in ICANN GNSO working groups but are setting up another working group, I suggest that as something that might be useful as guidelines. Nobody ever has to follow all of them, but all of them are useful in some circumstance. Methodologies for decision-making. So, yes, it outlines the available designations for working groups to indicate support. And those go from full consensus to consensus, which is defined in a process manner that my definition of it, which I believe corresponds to what's there, is that you get to a point where Everyone has managed to express the viewpoint they've gotten. Everyone understands all of the viewpoints. Most everybody has come to agreement. Now, this isn't counted or voting. It's most everybody has come to a conclusion. But there may still be, you know, a few individuals or a group that has a different opinion. That group, though, has to feel that their opinion has been understood. So basically what happens very often in an iterative process is something that I've done myself as a chair, and I've seen other chairs do, is you basically take a chance. You look around and you say, you know, I think we have consensus on A. There's a couple people that have argued not A for the following reasons. We've responded to the reasons for not A. And after extensive discussion, it looks like, you know, A is the consensus. Then if nobody screams at them and there's basically agreement in the group, even among the proponents of non-A, and I can quite voluntarily say I have often been a non-A, but I have gotten to the point where, yes, I believe that I've explained myself well. I believe that everybody understands why I'm objecting, and they still don't disagree, they still don't agree with me. At that point, I have to admit that the group has indeed reached consensus. It's not full consensus, and I have the ability to attach a minority statement that says, I think they're nuts. I think it should be not A, but, you know, this is my position. So that level of consensus is interesting. If, on the other hand, the chair comes out and lots of people says, no, I don't think this is agreed. I don't think that's agreed. I don't think the other thing. Then it's a cue that there's more discussion to be needed. The chair can, you know, collect the open issues and then proceed through them until, you know, she's gotten or he's gotten to the point of feeling safe at taking another chance and calling consensus again. Eventually, may take a couple times, you get to the point where none of the issues is new, none of the issues has any corner that hasn't been explored, and you move on. So, as I said, there's full consensus, there's consensus, there's strong support, significant opposition, and then there's divergence. So the second support but significant opposition is kind of when the group's habsies, you know. And then there's full divergence where there's many points of view and we just can't come to a conclusion. And that has happened. And as I said, people can always file minority views. And minority views are supposed to proceed down the line with the recommendations so that they're there and available for the GNSO Council to consider and for the board and others. Whoops, and there's further reading for those. And that's the working group guidelines. As I said, you can get a summary of it, or you can read it in gruesome detail. I recommend reading it in gruesome detail. Tips and tricks. Finding your way around. Yes, GNSOICANN.org is an essential page for following what's going on in the GNSO. You can find the operating procedures there. You can find the working group guidelines in the PDP manual. You can look at GNSO 101 materials. I haven't looked at them. You can review GNSO projects. You can look at previous charters, for example. I found today while I was wandering around something I didn't know that all the previous charters are there. So if you're into building a charter, you can read how other people have built it. You can look at it that way. And there's an acronym helper. And I've even noticed some of the documents online now, you just put your pointer over an acronym and you get help. You know, we're inventing them all the time. I don't think we're particularly worse than other organizations. Some people claim we are, but I think we have a healthy usage of acronyms. Trying to remember all of the full names for things is actually quite challenging. There's the ICANN Learn. There's a whole new bit of work having been done over the last years to basically put various tutorials and other learning materials in a specific place so that people can actually educate themselves on all of the processes and procedures to a very large extent. This one I recommend very much. Find an experienced working group member, either from your stakeholder constituency or others, or a staff person sometimes, to help you, to answer questions. Almost anyone will answer questions graciously. Some will do it more clearly than others. Lots of people are willing to help. My recommendation for anybody that's getting involved is find a working group that interests you, sign up, participate in the meetings. Don't feel an obligation to talk unless you really feel comfortable talking and have something to say. But listen to it for a while. Read the mailing list. Follow the documentation and jump in when you're ready. It's not as scary as it sometimes seems. The people are mostly nice. All of us say stupid things from time to time. I do it as much, if not more, than some of my colleagues. And, you know, the policy staff are really nice, helpful people. And anybody that knows me knows that I'm not quick to say nice things about staff. But these are really nice staff. You know, they're really always willing to help people. And, you know, they've helped all of us many times over the years. And I guess that puts me at the end of my talking, except for answering questions. This is actually a good chance. This webinar is a good chance to experiment with raising your hand and actually speaking. If either you're on the phone bridge, as I am, or if you have set up your microphone using the little Connect My Audio phone icon thingy at the top that lets you use your microphone. So, you know, do talk. This is a great time to talk since not even a working group. Okay, here's somebody talking.
Okay.
Was there a question from the person talking? Okay, I guess not. So I don't see any hands yet. Does that mean everything is crystal clear? There's no questions? That's impossible. Oh, I see a raised hand. Yes, on. Oh, you raise your hand by going to the little icon at the top that looks like a raised hand, and you click on it. And, in fact, a cool thing you do, if you click on the little arrow beside it, you see you can raise your hand, you can agree, you can disagree. You can say you stepped away. You could tell me to speak louder. You could tell me to speak softer. Speed up, slow down. You can actually even laugh at me. So there's all kinds of cool things you can do with that. But that's how you raise your hand. So, yes, I see two hands. I see Sean and I see Farzaneh. So, Sean first. Do you have your microphone on or do you wish to speak? Are you mute? Okay, perhaps you want to type your question in, and I'll move to Farzaneh, and I'll come back to Sean again later. Farzaneh, are you able to talk? Have you activated your microphone, and have you unmuted? That's a question one hears often in a call, because very often we forget to unmute. And we start rambling on about our very important point to make, and nobody's heard us because we've been on mute. Okay, so I see questions. I don't hear anybody talking. I see Sean has his microphone muted. I see Farzaneh has a microphone unmuted, so maybe she can talk. No talking. Okay. Let me read the question I have. I have a question from, just moved off my screen, from Siva Shanu. Aubrey, just to clarify my earlier point, some PDPs require intricate understanding of the ICANN, it keeps bouncing, as also expertise in policy, for example, ATRT, cross-constituency. But there are certain other policy topics that are relatively lighter and relatively general. I was suggesting that newcomers to PDP could be given a preference to such lighter PDP and non-PDP groups. Now, I don't know what you mean by preference, because anybody and everybody is allowed on any working group. So it's really, now certainly if you come and ask me for advice on, you know, what's a good PDP for you to be involved in, I'd probably not look at ease. I'd look at, well, what are you interested in? Are you interested in the intricate details of how registrars work? IRTP. Are you more into sort of the philosophical and theoretical spaces between policy and implementation and how all that works? Well, in which case there's the policy and implementation team. Are you interested in how registries would stop a certain kind of bad behavior? Then I would really not look in terms of what's easy, because I find them all equally difficult or equally hard. If I pay attention to the reading, they're easy. If it's a subject that's new to me, that I'm not interested in, that I don't do the reading on, and I don't keep up, they're hard. And in terms of the process, they're all pretty much the same. If it's a PDP, it's a PDP, and it's going to follow a certain track. If it's a GNSO working group, it's going to work pretty much the same. It's really the subject matter that'll define the difficulty. And as I say, there's absolutely nothing wrong with listening until you're comfortable, with asking questions on an email list. I've had people send me their questions before they sent them on the email list, to make sure that the question wouldn't get laughed at. I don't think they have to worry about that, but it's a service many of us provide. We'll check your questions before you ask them, and if we can't answer them. But, you know, so there's many ways to go. I tend to recommend being brave and brazen, but I know that's not everybody's attitude in life. Sean, you have your hand up again with your mic blanked out. I don't see anybody talking. Actually, just spending time doing this part, this, learning how to get your microphone working, learning how to raise your hand and answer and then put your hand down, are probably some of the most basic skills that one needs in terms of functioning during a working group call. So I would like somebody to give it a shot and raise your hand and use your microphone and ask a question.
Please.
Barzanay, please, go ahead. Unmute your microphone and speak. So speak. I don't hear you. Maybe there's something on my side because I don't hear. Hello? That was me that caused the echo. I just wanted to make sure that I'm getting the sound. Does anybody else want to take a chance at just saying something so we know that you have raised your hand and gotten experience using the microphone?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi, this is Kathy. I just want to test it so everyone can see that it does work.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
No problem.
And I see that you had your hand up, too, which is great. And normally, once you had finished speaking, you would then put your hand down and possibly even mute your microphone. One puts their hand down either by clicking on their hand again, that puts it down, or you can open up the drop-down menu and say clear status. Yep. Thank you. See, that was easy. Are there any questions? If not, maybe we'll just cut the call. I don't want to keep boring you all with my silly prattle. I believe, Sean, that the presentation document is available online. In terms of what group you would join for a starter, it really depends on what you're interested in. And you might be interested, if I have followed your writing accurately, in policy and implementation while that group is underway. And that's a point I actually should make about groups that are underway when you join a group midway. Any of us can join a group midway. You basically request to join, and unless it's at a very sensitive time, the working group chairs will usually say yes. That is somewhat at the discretion of a working group chair, but I've never seen it be a problem. But what they request is that you take the time to read the mailing list up until that date, that you take the time to listen to the recordings of all the calls, because a lot of issues will have been discussed already. A lot of points will have already been brought up, dissected, and discussed. This is not to say that you can't bring up something new, or that if the explanation that went before was not adequate, that you can't ask the question again. Of course you can, but it becomes a real impediment to a working group's progress when somebody joins in the middle of a group and has not done the prep work of making sure that they have caught up to all the people that are already working. And so it's really a politeness. It also helps in terms of your integration into the group, because after about the 10th time that someone says, we covered that during our first 2 weeks, you know, please check that out and then come back with any further questions, then it perhaps does create a rough patch. But groups are very amenable to people coming in as long as they've done the work to catch up to where everyone else is at. And that's the same thing reference I give, since nobody's asking questions, I'll just give advice. That's the thing, that if you miss a meeting, if you miss 2 meetings, for example, I was away in Brazil and Geneva the last 2 weeks, and so I missed 2 meetings of various groups that I'm a member of. I had to read. I had to catch up on transcripts, or I had to keep my mouth shut during the meeting, because I was behind, and until I've caught up, it's my responsibility to, you know, catch up to them. It's not their responsibility to bring me up. The information is all there. There's archives. There's recordings. There's transcripts. Recordings are great for flights. Now, they help some people sleep, but they also are a good place to, you know, fill up an hour or two listening to meetings you may have missed. I recommend them highly. They work on iPads and Android phones. They work great. Anybody have any questions? In which case, I suggest with 9 minutes to go till the hour that if no one has any more questions, that, you know, we can end this call and go on. I hope, I see Olivier is typing, so maybe there's a question. I see Sean is typing, so maybe there's a question. I'll wait those out. But I hope to see you in working groups. And as I say, feel free to come to me with questions. I'm usually fairly good about answering, except for when I don't know what to answer, and then I'll usually tell you. Go to the staff. They're friendly. They're helpful. They're overworked, but that's okay. Probably beat me up after this, but hey. Is there anything else I can offer? Multiple attendees are typing, yay. See, maybe I'm missing something. Okay. That's right, Olivia, you're co-chair for policy and implementation, so you're already deeply steeped in all of this. Okay, well then, thank you all. Thank you for thanking me. And it's been a pleasure. Oh, yes. So, bye-bye all.
Goodbye.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, bye-bye. Helen. We now stop the recording. Goodbye.
Bye.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Natalie.
Thank you, Avery. Bye-bye.
And this does conclude today's conference. You may disconnect at this time.
Thank you very much, Ewan. Bye-bye.